Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Boomer.
Well, it may be a week late, but it actually has come to pass. There are more members of the Redcast than there are the Pac-12. So
we did it. We passed the Pac-12 in membership. That is,
and I've had to tell San Diego State, no, you cannot be on the show several times.
So. Well, they can create their new power conference, you know, and add us in, I guess. That's their thought process. I don't know. Also with Redcast, Rob.
Yeah, I'd just like to welcome to all my new favorite Twitter followers from CU coming into the show tonight. I'm sure you're lurking there somewhere, so feel free to jump into the comments and say hi.
Rob, if you're stoking the passions of the CU Buff fan base.
Well, you just use passion and CU Buffs in the same sentence.
I said, are you stoking? I'm questioning, dude, if you can do it, I guess. I don't know.
I don't even know if that's possible, Dave.
No, I think it's possible. You know, they're out there. All right. Also with Mac.
What's up, Redcasters? Yes. Fall camp is begun and passed. We've got these new theories they dropped for us to all enjoy. So a lot to unpack, and we have a great guest on tonight. So I'm excited.
Absolutely. And last but definitely not least, Honky.
Yeah. Great minds must think alike. Except if you haven't had a chance, Redcasters, make sure to check out episode 1 of Nebraska Football's A Look In series on YouTube. My head still hurts from running through the wall last night. Mm-hmm. So,
All right. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we do have a great show. I mean, we kind of kicked off our season, whatever season this is, Honky. I can't keep track any longer.
We're don't even know
around
anymore.
Forever.
I think it's season 8.
With season 8 of the Redcast. Yeah. With an awesome interview with Tommy Frazier last week. But we have one of our kind of annual preseason guests on tonight. So, Honky, I'll let you introduce.
Yeah, absolutely. We welcome back to the Redcast Heisman voter and owner of Pick 6 Previews, the most accurate P5 magazine from 2012 to 2022, Brett Ciancia. How are you doing, Brett?
Hey, well, thanks for having me on. It's good to be back on the Go Big Redcast, one of my favorite stops on my annual radio and podcast tour. And you guys are one of the first to ever invite me onto the show. So, I mean, that was you know, I've always had a soft spot for the show, and you guys do great work. I tune in throughout the season, especially during if there's a key Nebraska game coming up. I love getting the insider feel from you guys. So, and not to mention, it was great meeting you all in person when I was out in Lincoln for the Oklahoma game. Got to meet Honky and Mac, and we did a nice tour of the stadium. Really cool insider access there. Saw the history in that building. It was unbelievable. And then got to meet Rob up in New Brunswick, New Jersey, of all places, at the Rutgers game. So, just great to be on with you guys again. It's always an honor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can pick up your copy of the 2023 season preview by going to pick6previews.com. Brett, you were so kind to send me a copy there the other day in the mail. This is just amazing. I mean, trying to get through all this, I couldn't do it all in the last couple of days, but we're going to get through a lot of it here tonight. And it doesn't feel like we've kicked off the season. To Dave's point, we haven't kicked off the Redcast season until we've had Brett on, where we can start going through all the preseason and through the season stuff. But before we get to that, I just want to talk about an upcoming show and a couple of our other promos. We have a fan forum coming up on Thursday night, August 10th, with Kendall Wickwire Sr. He's with the Wired Access podcast, which is on Herd at Sports. After that, Alumni Hall, and you're going to see their logo up on top of the show throughout. 2 Lincoln locations, downtown 1120p and South Point Pavilions behind Barnes & Noble. Pipeline Jerky, let's rebuild the pipeline. Go to pipeline-jerky.com. You can use code REDCAST to get 10% off, and all that money goes to NIL, goes to our offensive line so that we can get back to having Outland Award winners and all that good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, Smack & Smooch, quality apparel, custom-made orders. Go to Smack and Smooch, the shirts, the hats, everything that we have. You can use the QR code there. We also have the links in our descriptions on social media to get to our store. And last but not least, the battle in Boulder. That's going to be up at SS Park the night before the Nebraska-Colorado mm-hmm. game. We've had Tommy Frazier on the show, as Dave mentioned earlier. He'll be at it. Adam Carricker is going to be at it. Just a bunch of cool things. If you're going to be out there in the area, if you're going to Boulder for the game, come out there, hang out with the Redcast, and we'll be having some fun. The battle in Boulder.
Hey, Hockey, where's that event at?
It's in Estes Park at a hotel, I think.
Just wanted to give you the chance to reemphasize that it's at Estes Park, which I think...
Yeah, last time I think I said it's in the mountains somewhere. I couldn't read the text was too small. So
out as well. Last time I talked with Gary Novotny, the owner of Big Red of the Rockies, and Gary Michaels Clothiers there in Lincoln, he had mentioned to me that there was only about 10 or 15 tickets left, and that was over a week ago. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event. I'm looking forward to it. It looks like we've got all of our tickets used now, so. I'm actually going to get my wife out of the house and with me at a Husker event. So that'll be fun because you know how much she's a huge football fan. So
outstanding.
Actually, right. His wife was going to be there. So that's
good. Well, Brett, as we usually do with you, we're going to kind of break this into segments. And we're going to start the first part here. We're going to talk about the Blue Blood programs because that's a key part of your magazine each year. But in addition to that, we'll go to national talk. Then we'll talk about the Big Ten. And then we'll finish talking about Nebraska football. If we have a little time at the end, I think we can even talk about some things like conference realignment and different issues that are going on within college football. But we always start with this. It's something that I'm very much aligned with you on from a tradition standpoint. And as Husker fans, as Redcasters, we love the idea that we actually show up in this poll. And it's a good thing. It's the Blue Blood program. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do each year, how this fits into the Pick Six previews, and what does this mean that we're one of the eight?
Yeah, well, the Blue Blood program debate, it's an annual poll that I do in January each offseason. It's a part of the offseason calendar where there's just nothing going on. And you see Twitter arguing over everything. But one of the things that comes up every year is which programs are considered Blue Bloods. And, you know, I've seen different formulas for it. I've seen different metrics. People try and put a number on it. But really, it's everyone has their own definition of what a Blue Blood means. So I went for the opposite. I went for just a huge poll and just try and get hundreds of thousands of votes and just see where the mindset of the overall college football world is at. So I think this year we drew in 170,000 votes, something like that. And just basic yes, no answers. You know, is Alabama a blue blood? Yes, no. Is Ohio State? Yes, no. And what's happened is I think it's the sixth straight year I've done it. It's the same eight programs every year, no matter if some are winning national titles or some are going through their worst 5-year stretch in history, like your program. But no, it's a testament to Nebraska that even through their worst years since what, the 50s or 60s, that they're still considered a blue blood by what, 75% of the country. So, yeah. And then the thing is also, it's not like they're barely breaking through at 51% or something. There's a huge drop off from that top eight every year to the others that are like around 50%, Penn State, Florida State, Georgia, Tennessee. As you can imagine, since Nebraska is the current program that's down among the eight, they get a lot of question marks on Twitter, a lot of responses, but, all these programs have had down periods, Oklahoma, USC, Texas had been down. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see if this next hire helps, you know, reignite the program and get them back to where they belong in college football's, history.
Dave, what were you asking before we started?
Yeah. Well, I've got a couple of questions on this. I do find the poll intriguing, and Brett, you kind of alluded to the fact that you just gone with quantity over like any sort of statistical quality, right? With this poll, you're just trying to get as many votes in as possible. As a Nebraska football podcast, we have to acknowledge we probably are better at Twitter than almost any other fan base out there, right? We're very active and we can kind of cook the books a little bit on this, but it's nice to see. I agree with the poll. I want to be clear with all of our listeners. I think we're a blue blood, but it is intriguing to see how Texas has risen. I'm looking at the stats right now, 24 percentage points apparently compared to last year.
Yeah. So right,
Michigan's up nine. Yeah. So like having a better season has actually helped them kind of, you know, solidify that.
It's interesting with Texas though, and this is a problem. Maybe one flaw with the poll, I'll admit, is that certain fan bases can hijack, and it had nothing to do with Texas in this case. It was actually Oklahoma fans that last year retweeted it like crazy. I think they had more votes than anybody in the Texas poll, more than their own poll.
Oh wow.
And as you can imagine, they sank Texas down to like 60-something percent. And they barely made it last year. So yeah, so that plus 24 was basically just that OU Twitter didn't find that tweet this year. So I guess that is, you know,
that's hilarious.
It really is. I mean, so I think part of the logic I might put in next year is just to put a 1-hour cap on the tweet. You know, you can time your polls And if I limit it to an hour or two, that might limit how far out it gets. But that does mean a lower overall vote count. So again, I think in the big picture, this is an inexact science. It's you can talk to anybody and they all have different definitions of it. People will weight national titles or all Americans or just raw wins or how recent they were, all that. So, you know, it's just a one snapshot look. But I think it's interesting that the same eight, even despite some Twitter inconsistencies, every year it's that same eight.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to compare it relative year over year, because the Honky does the same thing with every single one of our games every season, right? Where he sends out the, will we beat Minnesota, Colorado, on down the line, right? And in many years, it's been, we're going to go 12-0. I think, Honky, you said this year it's going to be 10-2, which I'm very impressed with the Nebraska fan base to be tempered that much that they might acknowledge we might lose two games.
Yeah, they are we'll get to the Nebraska record, but you're right, Dave. These are the polls right here, and so
it's the same concept.
Yeah, but almost 50,000 votes for us. You know, not quite 170.
I'm curious, Brett. On like you said that it's been the same eight teams over the last 6 years, and you do a lot of these radio shows and you interact with a lot of other fan bases. Do you get a lot of complaints from, say, Georgia or Penn State saying, like, are you kidding me, really? I mean, we're always ninth or 10th, and that's not good enough for you. You have other fan bases campaigning for them to get blue bloods.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a couple of interesting cases there, and it all comes back to how you define it. I think one interesting case is Florida State, where if you look at any of the historic win counts, you know, if you just look at all-time wins, they're towards the bottom, but that's just a matter of years. That's like a counting stat, just because they're such a young school and a young football program. If you look at win percentage, if you're looking at per game, right, they're way up there. So, and they maximized on their dynasty. They had three national titles, all those straight top five finishes. So they have an argument. It's just they don't have all the wins that Michigan has before 1900. You know what I mean? So that's one interesting case. Penn State, too. I think that they're hurt by their lack of national titles. They have a ton of undefeated seasons, if you look back. Yeah. And they were always a long-term independent. Maybe didn't draw enough big bowl appearances. And so they don't have the national titles to match some of the competitors. Tennessee is a similar case with Nebraska, where they really dominated in the 60s, 70s, 80s, had a national title in the 90s, but hasn't done much since. And so they get some arguments from some of their older fans. And then really the last one here, and this is an interesting case, they might be able to move up into the category, is Georgia. Because they have everything else you'd want besides that national title number. And now they just stack two of them, bang, bang. Mm-hmm. And really the favorites odds on to do it again this year. So they have the all-time wins, the win percentage. They have, you know, the Heismans, all that kind of stuff. It's just they only had the two national titles, 1942, I believe, and 1982. Mm-hmm. Got to check my years there. But, you know, one in the 40s, one in the 80s. And then nothing. So that was what was holding them back. But 80, now you start to stack
1980.
Them. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, you start to 80. Stack.
Clemson was 81. Penn State was 82.
Okay. Right. There you go. So, and now you see that reflected. They got a plus 12 bump here year to year. So they're close. They're ninth in the poll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting.
Well, you mentioned Georgia, and I think that gets us into the national discussion here. And we'll start the national discussion by going over your college football playoff teams that you had in the Pick Six preview. So you have as your number one, Georgia, number two, Michigan, number three, Florida State, and number four, Ohio State. So some teams that are in that blue blood category and ones that are sniffing it right around the outside of it too. But from a Big Ten perspective, we're looking at another two teams in it, according to the Pick Six preview. So Ohio State and Michigan making it for a second straight year. How'd you come to this conclusion? How'd you get to these four teams?
Yeah, well, I'll start at the top with Georgia. It's just the most proven product in college football right now. They recruit right there with Alabama. They continue to reload after sending record NFL draft classes to the pros. And I think that when you listen to these players post-game or post-practice in the notes, they still are motivated. They still think they're the underdog. So credit Kirby Smart for being a master motivator, really, keeping them hungry, chasing a third national title. They're looking to become the first team since Minnesota in the 30s to go three straight consecutive outright titles. So would be incredible to pull that off. They're the odds on favorite, though. I think that they have five stars at every position. And really a favorable schedule too. When you look at this, they avoid a lot of the Giants in the SEC West and nothing out of conference to bat an eye at. So they're number one. For the Big Ten, this is Michigan's best team yet, and this is coming off of back-to-back conference titles, two playoff appearances in a row. Usually what happens with playoff teams is they send the bulk of their starting lineup to the pros the next year, or they they go to the pros early. Not with Michigan. I think it's a record the amount of production they have coming off of a playoff team. So led by the best offensive line in the country, I think they win the conference again. And Ohio State, I still have in the bracket. As you can see, they're number four. I think there's enough roster talent. It's still an elite offense, and I think that they're going to still get in there, whether it be 11-1 and they back in like last year or some other scenario. But now the wild card pick I have is Florida State coming out of the ACC. I think they just cracked into the preseason poll and the coaches poll around eight, but I've got them up at number three. And a couple quick reasons why. Last year was really the breakthrough year statistically. You look at their metrics, my numbers, they're top 10 in almost everything, and that was last year. They now bring back the number one most returning production off that team. The whole thing's back. They got key NFL decisions from some defenders. But really, and this is the other game changer, is how they've embraced the transfer portal. Another top five transfer haul. While Clemson ignores the portal and is now thin at some positions, Florida State has really bolstered their roster. So I think they're going to beat Clemson and win the conference and get in there as a one-loss conference champ.
Mm-hmm. Now, a year or two ago, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was 2 years ago. This question goes to Dave. You had, Brett, you had North Carolina, and Dave, you had North Carolina in your playoff, and Dave took question with that. Dave, do you have any questions with any of this compared to the North Carolina pick a couple years ago?
No, not as much. That's for certain. I see where Brett's coming with Florida State. I think they're trending in the right direction. And I think it's the question of, do you think they can beat Clemson in the ACC, right? And that game is early in the season, right, Brett? I mean, it's like late September. So if Florida State can win that one game, I think they're in pretty good position to really run the table there. And so, I mean, they're by no means a guarantee, but if they could beat Clemson early, they're going to be in position. So I get it. With Georgia, totally, I mean, you can't take them, but I guess my fun question on that one is like, so we're probably the last team to try to go for a three-peat, right? We went back to back 94-95. So, we didn't get that done. So in this year, if you want to translate that 1996 Nebraska team, who on Georgia's schedule is their Arizona State?
Yeah. Where's
probably
the
not Ball State or Tennessee Martin. So we can rule those two out.
They were like, oh, my goodness, they just didn't come prepared and they blew it.
Yeah. Well, maybe Missouri. I mean, Missouri played them tough last year and they're really one dimensional. It's really just an elite defense. So maybe something like that could happen. I think Tennessee is too highly ranked to be considered off the radar. So that's probably the toughest test is Tennessee. But yeah, I agree with you. The UNC pick will never leave me. I've had some hits, I've had some misses. I've had some really good hits, some really bad misses, but nothing will come close to the UNC. I might as well have had it tattooed on me. I mean, that was the worst one. That was the worst one in Pick Six history.
To your credit, Brett, last year you had Utah, and Utah made a run. They didn't quite get it done, but they were close. Yeah. Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, Utah. Of course they threw an interception in the end zone in the opener against Florida, and that sunk the playoff pick before we even got off the starting blocks. But they won the conference again. Proved me right there. Everyone had USC to win the league. I went Utah again. They continue to prove me right in the Pac-12, and I actually have them there a third time this year to win the Pac-12 over USC. So. We'll see. But Utah's a proven product. Florida State, a lot more variable. I just have a little bit of faith in the returning production, the transfer haul they brought in, and a lot of that dual threat quarterback, Jordan Travis, NFL talent. So, and really, it's almost more of a testament to how weak the ACC is. It's almost, you can look at it that way, where besides Clemson, I don't see any competitor at all. So even if they lose to LSU, I still think they have a mulligan there. If they beat LSU in the opener, then they're really sitting pretty. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Dave mentioned, you mentioned the 1996 team with Nebraska being the last time that we could have had a three-time a repeat champ. Kind of the downfall of that year was just you lost a lot from the 95 team, quarterback and everything, and you're replacing that. even with a lot of talent, ton of talent came back in 96, just wasn't able to get over the hump, went 11-2, not a bad year. If you look at Georgia right now, you know, losing Bennett, losing that quarterback, that solid person you've had back there now for the last few years, you know, I mean, is there a chink in the armor somewhere with Georgia that, you know, that you could see a couple, one or two or three close losses, or is there just such a talent differential? I mean, you think at worst this is 11-1. I mean, what do you look at when you're looking at number one right now?
Well, I think if you're looking at raw talent, I don't see any holes on the roster. That's a boring answer, but it's five stars everywhere. So unless all the five stars, unless they missed on all their five stars, which is extremely rare, you know, you talk with Stetson Bennett leaving, he was an incredible college quarterback, but they have multiple five stars battling to be a successor. I think the flaw, if you want to find one, I don't think it's player personnel, but it could be coordinator wise where they lose Todd Monken, the mastermind of their offense. Mm-hmm. He really helped modernize that team. You look back at Georgia 5 years ago, it was still old-fashioned, stuck-in-the-mud offense, but he really modernized them. Now he's with, I think, the Baltimore Ravens, and they're going through a coordinator change there. So if there is a weakness, maybe you lose some of that play calling and scheme edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes sense.
All right, well, let's get to the conferences then on a national level. And the SEC, you've got Georgia winning that. The Big Ten, you have Michigan. The ACC, you have Florida State. Big 12, you have Texas. And then the Pac-12, from what we could tell, is it just right now you couldn't make a decision? Is it Utah and Washington tied? Or you know, how are you looking at the Pac-12, I guess, with those two?
Yeah, so I have Utah winning it. But in terms of the conference ranking prediction, like the standings prediction, I have them both finishing with the same conference record. For that point of view, yeah, tie. It's taking a tie in first place because – they scrapped their divisions over there. It's no longer the North and South. It's 1 through 12. You got to rank these teams. So, but no, I see a Las Vegas title game between Utah and Washington with Utah winning their third straight crown. Yeah, no USC there. I think that it's still a major liability on defense for them. And I have enough trust in Utah's staff and players. You know, very quietly, that whole team is back from last year. You know, the one that beat USC twice and embarrassed them in Las Vegas, that whole team is back. So, I think they're going to get it done again.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the health of Cam Rising? You think he's playing early in the season or he's going to come back slow?
Yeah, well, that's definitely a question point. And so is the health of their tight end, Brent Keithy. They were both held out of spring. You know, when I watched the spring game, they were there in their T-shirts and hats. So I think that they're still projected to make it. Now, you know, a matter of weeks could be the difference of missing four games or zero games. So, if that's the case, I mean, they won a couple games without Rising last year. I like their backup, Nate Johnson. He's a speed demon quarterback. You know, he's really fast runner, and I'm sure he's getting all the ones reps all offseason. So I think they're going to be fine early on. Now, they do draw some tough openers with Florida and Baylor, but in terms of a conference race, I'm picking a conference winner. The Rising will be back for all that.
Yeah, that's the way to look at it. I agree.
Hey, Boomer, you grew up in West Texas. You were even a Longhorn fan at times growing up. What are your thoughts here? You see the Big 12, the last year of Texas in the Big 12 on top? Are you,
is Texas are you, back?
Are you buying Texas there, Boomer? Are you buying
not until they actually win the conference. And God only knows, you know.
But Boomer, Quinn Ewers cut his hair.
Well, that's true. So I was just saying, you know, we might have some familiarity with, you know, Big 12 refereeing, you know, when you're leaving the conference. So you never know what could happen there in some of those conference games. So,
yeah.
Well, and that's just kind of the odd thing. You look at a lot of these teams and how many of them aren't in these conferences next season. So, or after this season. Oof. So it's crazy.
That's right. When you think about if Texas is back or not, you got to consider they've ruined more conferences than national titles they've won. So, I mean, they are back to doing that. You've seen Pac-12 wiped away as a domino of what they did. So they're back to doing that at least.
Well, I have a question too, though, about that, because I saw Texas on there. It's interesting because teams like TCU, Kansas State, and Oklahoma, right? You have them all basically 1, 2, 3, 4 on there. And I'm curious why Texas over the other three. Kansas State, you know, looked good in the first half, at least against Alabama at one point. But, you know, Oklahoma, TCU coming out of a national championship. So what's that about?
Yeah. So we'll start with TCU. Incredible 1 year turnaround by Sonny Dykes. They lose the entire offense. So, I mean, Max Duggan gone, both the receivers, both all American linemen, both running backs. So complete rebuild personnel-wise on offense. I do like their secondary, their back seven. But, no, I think that they're going to take a little bit of a step back. With Kansas State, what a proven program builder Klieman has become, moving up from the FCS ranks up to the Big 12. And they really grinded away a conference title last year. Very impressive. Texas beat them last year, though. And then when you look at Oklahoma, still a very mystery team, a wild card team. They recruit the best in the conference right there with Texas, looking for a second-year bonus under Venables this year. But what led me to the Texas pick, first, I always like to look back at last year. Statistically, so they had a couple close losses. They were top 10 on both sides of the ball in a lot of metrics, and they bring back a lot. I think 9 starters or 10 starters back from the offense, only losing Bijan Robinson. And yes, that's a huge loss, but the rest of the thing is back. Great transfer hauls again. I don't really see a weakness. And then when you look at coordinators, I like both of them. Pete Kwiatkowski, he built those Washington defenses that made the playoff about 5 or 6 years ago. And Kyle Flood, a great offensive line developer. So they look like the total package. And I understand that Texas usually underperforms against expectations. So, you know, I'm not confident enough to put them in the playoff, but they're my pick right now in a very uncertain league to win it here.
Yeah, speaking of uncertain leagues like that, when you have a scenario like in the Big 12 where you've got BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston all joining, how do you slot them in, and how do you go about kind of judging how they fit?
Yeah, that was a new feature of the book this year, adding so many new teams. That's we've had the same Power 5 lineup for a while. So, yeah, I got to welcome in UCF, Houston, Cincinnati. I think it's a significant step up in competition, and I know that Cincinnati and UCF, that they've had their wins over the Power 5 on the national stage, but that might have been a bowl game here and there or an opener. To do it 9 straight weeks, it's a whole new beast. So I think it's a big step up in talent they're going to be facing off against. And only UCF out of that pack do I have in the top half of the conference. I think the other three are going to go through some growing pains. Houston, I have dead last in the league. BYU tied in 9th, and Cincinnati down at 12th. Cincinnati might have been higher, but they lost their coaching staff and lost a ton of players to the transfer portal, mass exodus, and a lot more to the pros. So complete rebuilds for Cincy and Houston.
All right, fellas. Well, let's move on to the Big Ten here. And we'll start with the Big Ten East. And you've got ranked 1 through 7, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Maryland in the middle at 4, Michigan State 5th, Indiana, and Rutgers. And as I'm looking at that schedule, I noticed that 2 of our wins last year came against number 6 and 7. It was nice having Indiana and Rutgers on the schedule. Nebraska does not have that this year. Nebraska will be playing Maryland, Michigan State, and Michigan out of that bunch. walk us through this this Big Ten East here, Brett. How'd you come with this order?
Well, I think right away, look at the top. It's one of the most top-heavy in America. You could argue all 3 of them are playoff contenders. I first researched Penn State and was blown away by everything they had on the roster. It looks like they fixed their longtime problem at offensive line. 5-star quarterback coming in as a starter. You know, a lot of staff retention, a lot of player retention. So I thought right away, hey, this could be the winner and a playoff pick. The next day, I do Michigan, and Michigan's just better at every spot. They're more proven at every spot. They've already done it, right? 2-time defending champs, 2-time playoff. So I boxed out Penn State, but still strong enough to be 7th nationally. And competing for a conference crown. So I went Michigan, Ohio State 2, Penn State 3, and then a huge, huge drop off down to number 4, Maryland. I think the drop is number 7, Penn State, to number 41, Maryland, in the Power 5 landscape. So almost like a different conference to talk about. As top 3s in the country, you could say the best top 3 of any division in the country.
Mm-hmm. We're kind of losing you a little bit here, Brett, so I don't know if you're moving around the basement. Hopefully we can get a good connection with you here. But what you're saying is the top 3, there's a big difference between the top 3 of Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. And once it gets to Maryland and the rest, there's quite the drop-off in the Big Ten East, correct?
Right, yeah. There's a huge drop-off there. You know, I considered Penn State for a playoff spot. Then the next day I looked at Michigan, and Michigan's just stronger at every position group and had done it twice in a row. So Michigan's the pick, but from Penn State to Maryland, you go from 7th all the way down to 41st in the Power 5 landscape. So huge drop off. But still a very strong top 3, probably the strongest top 3 in the country.
Well, I was just going to ask you that. Is there any other division, any other conference that has something similar? You know, the SEC West, the SEC East. Is there anything close from a top three?
No, I mean, I don't think there is because you could argue SEC West with Alabama and LSU, but who's their third? Who's the third punch there? And I don't know. Is A&M or Ole Miss on the same level as Penn State this year? I don't think so. So in terms of three, I would go Big Ten East. And it also brings up a point where there's a scenario that could happen. It's kind of a deep cut, but the 2008 Big 12 South, that was Texas Tech with Graham Harrell, Mike Leach, Oklahoma with Sam Bradford, and then the Colt McCoy team at Texas. They went in a triangle of losses, you know, 1-1-1. They all beat each other, and it was an 11-1 tiebreaker scenario, a triangle. So this is a deep cut, but it could be a 2008 Big 12 South here. If they all beat each other once, you'll be left with three playoff caliber teams. Not that all three don't make the bracket, but they're all going to be considered.
I have one fun fact for you, Brett, and the Redcast here. Boomer, Mac, Dave, and I were in Norman, Oklahoma, the night of Crabtree catching that touchdown pass against Texas. In fact, we were right across the street from Gaylord Family Stadium watching it and watching Oklahoma fans going nuts. It was kind of an embarrassing night for us because we got blown out. We were down like 35-0 at the end of the first quarter. But
it was bad.
To be part of history that way, that to watch Oklahoma fans responding to Texas Tech getting ahead of Texas that night, that was a crazy setting.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. That's an angle of that I never saw before. I never thought about that.
Brett, you beat me to the punch. I was going to ask if there's this chance of this 11-1 tie in first place there for the Big Ten East. So. Glad you brought that up. I mean, if that happens, you got to think that Penn State has really hit with this quarterback, Drew Allar. Is that right? I keep on hearing his name's pronounced slightly differently, even from his head coach, apparently. But I mean, I haven't seen this guy play at all, really. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I saw him in spots last year. He got some time against their MAC opponents, and he looked fine. He looked like you'd expect, and he got in right in the opener against Purdue, and you saw the strong arm right away. I think he misfired, but you saw the arm strength. But their fans have been raving for 2 years now to get him in there. They're excited. They were even booing Sean Clifford at their whiteout game because they wanted the 5-star Drew Allar to come in. So I think that it's wild, but Penn State has wanted this for a long time. They finally had their 5-star guy, and really not just a quarterback, but it was a top 5 recruiting class. 2 cycles ago. They're all now in their second or third years on campus. I'm based out of Pennsylvania. These people have been talking about that recruiting class for a long time. It's helped buy James Franklin more years all the way up until this Rose Bowl really solidified his progress for the program. But there's high expectations.
They've circled this year as an opportunity, right? Yeah, it just happens that you're in the Big Ten East, right? You know, Penn State with this roster a couple of years from now, in a non-division Big Ten might be, feeling like a likely candidate for a 12-team playoff.
Yeah. I mean, if you put them right now, if you put them in the Pac-12 or the Big 12, I pick them to win it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, there you go. Wow. That's impressive.
Redcasters watching and listening. We're getting closer. We're moving closer to Nebraska. Here we go to the Big Ten West. And from first to seventh, you have Wisconsin, Luke Fickell's first season, number one. Iowa, number two. Illinois, number three. Minnesota, who Nebraska plays 3 weeks from tomorrow night, August 31st, at Minneapolis, number four. Nebraska at fifth. Purdue at sixth. Northwestern at seventh. And all the craziness that's gone on in their offseason. So you have the Northwestern craziness. You have Purdue, Wisconsin, Nebraska all bringing in new coaches. How did you come to this order for the West, Brett?
Yeah, this was really the division of change this year. All those new head coaches, a lot of new coordinators, a lot of new quarterbacks. Scandal, Northwestern there late in the picture. But, I ultimately landed on Wisconsin. I really love their coaching hires all over the place. We'll start with Luke Fickell, great program builder at Cincinnati. If you watch the NFL draft, you kept seeing Cincinnati's name come up. And you should know they're nowhere near the top 25 as a recruiter. I mean, they were a non-AQ team when he was there. So the way he developed those kind of players in the NFLers was impressive. Great defensive mind, too, with Tressel coming over. But really, the offense, I'm really intrigued to see. It's a new-look offense under Phil Longo, a coach I like to talk to each offseason. Part of the reason that talked me into the UNC pick, actually, how great that offense was at UNC. They just had nothing else to go with it. But so, yeah, they're still going to run the ball, but it's going to look a lot different. They're going to be spread formations. It's going to be fast tempo. But they brought in a great quarterback in Mordecai and a lot of good receivers. It's a totally rebuilt offense. So I went with Wisconsin as the overall West winner.
Is there any concern? I know we've talked about this at Nebraska. A little bit of the comparison of back in the day, Solich gets fired. They bring in Callahan. We switch everything. We switch offenses. We go in completely different direction from a coach who was winning at a 70-plus percent clip. Very similar to what Paul Chris was doing there at Wisconsin. And, you know, they wanted to make a change. And they've made a change, a clear change at Wisconsin. It's going to be very different looking there than what it was in the past. And it might work out great. But is there a fear? Is there a risk that that change, too, could it blow up in their face? I mean, Wisconsin likes to copy Nebraska from colors to you know, running the football and all the things that, you know, Barry Alvarez brought. Have they copied Nebraska in a bad way now?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's a couple things here. You know, I think that in the new transfer portal and NIL age, you know, they're still committed to their old-fashioned formula. I mean, I think Luke Fickell has even come out and say he wants to be still a high school recruiter and developing program, you know, the anti-Dion, if you will. Now, so I think that they still want to do their development, their walk-ons, all the stuff that they actually copied Nebraska from. But no, all that, I think they're going to retain that mindset. And then in terms of the offense, yeah, it's going to look different. They're going to throw it a lot more, but they are still going to run the ball. And I think this gets overlooked when you hear Phil Longo and Air Raid and UNC. UNC actually led the ACC in rushing for the 4 years that he was there. It's, they definitely, if the numbers are in the box, you know, if you don't respect their run game, they're going to pound it. So, yeah, I'm interested to see it. I do think they're going to, you know, they're still going to have that elite defense. I think the bigger shock wasn't that they fired Chris. It's that they didn't hire Jim Leonard, though. I thought that he was Mr. Wisconsin. I thought they were going to go with him. But they got a great one in Fickell and a good offensive mind, too. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a successful tenure here.
Dave?
Yeah. You know, Brett, could the numbers lie a little bit on Phil Longo in North Carolina? I mean, sometimes run game stats are opportunistic, right? To your point. If the numbers aren't in the box, they're gonna run, right? Whereas there's a mentality where you want to say that I want to establish a line of scrimmage and I'm gonna be, you know, tougher, stronger, bigger, all that type of stuff, right? You know, at times Nebraska could run the ball with Frost, but we never felt like we really like dominated the other team very often, right? And you can say you're gonna run the ball, but if you're a coordinator who has often relied on throwing the ball in crunch time, that is what your trait is. I think Phil Longo is still probably, even though he has good numbers running the ball with Carolina, doesn't mean he doesn't think pass first, I guess. You know, I feel like the transition for the offensive lineman, it's different, right? In the sense of like, and Mac and Hockey can talk about this for like an hour, but like, if you know you're going to run the ball and you're just going to impose your will on somebody, you're going to push forward, right? Where if you know that you are in a run game situation where it's more of a pass block that you might run out of, et cetera, and the lateral quickness of those offensive linemen need to exhibit, and you're talking about Wisconsin guys who are used to just plowing forward, it's a different type of blocking, you know? I mean, I guess I still struggle a little bit buying into the Wisconsin hype with, they're going to still run the ball. Don't worry. Phil Longo likes to throw it, but we're still Wisconsin. I'm like, let's find out. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, sir. Yeah. So there's a pro and a con. The pro is that on a per play basis, they're productive. I mean, they are getting their yards. I think they stacked a couple thousand yard rushers in the same season together. But I do agree with you on this point, and it backs up what you were saying. When they get into crunch time, when they get into the red zone, that offense crumbles a little bit. And that's been a problem for years at UNC. They can move it really well up until inside the 10, the 20, and then they freeze up because, to your point, they don't have that physicality when it matters most, when the defense knows you're going to run it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might be better to run when there's less in the box and you catch them by surprise, but when push comes to shove, they did lack some physicality at UNC. So I agree with you on that. That is a concern.
I'm curious, too. Like, I guess I don't know how else to put this. What's your margin of error? I would say ranking 1 through 5, because I don't really expect a whole lot out of Purdue or Northwestern this year. But, you know, I mean, you've got them in there. But I mean, you know, Nebraska beat Iowa last year and, you know, they open up with Minnesota. So let's say they win that game. Like all of a sudden, like how, you know, what, where do you come with that? I don't know why you're laughing, Dave. I'm just curious.
I think we're going to get to Nebraska here in a little bit.
But well, I wasn't even asking about Nebraska. I just thought the overall division itself, like where you rank, like a margin of error with that, because all those teams seem like they'd be really close this year in a lot of ways. So,
yeah, it was definitely one of the more difficult divisions to predict. You know, it's a lot of uncertainties. I think they're all in the middle tier. I think Wisconsin is at 20th. And then you have Nebraska around 50th. So I guess that is a decent chunk there. But, yeah, I don't know. You could argue for any of these that there's some pros and cons. I mean, with Wisconsin, mm-hmm. we touched on it. With Iowa, I know what we're getting. We're getting an elite defense again. And you'd think with some of the personnel changes, it's got to be at least slightly better offensively. Even slightly better offensively is 9 wins. Illinois, yeah, usually they're towards the bottom of my predictions. But they proved their model last year. Minnesota, again, they continue to produce 9-win teams under Fleck. So yeah, this division was very tough. I looked a lot at the cross division too, to see who they drew, in the cross division slate. That helped a little bit in my decisions, but yeah, it was one of the more difficult. I'm not going to lie there. You know, the East is very clear cut where there's your top three and then a bottom four. This one's very fluid. It's just kind of a mess of teams.
You know, Brett, I was going to say the same thing there that, you know, the East seemed to be very much a top three and bottom four. It, I guess to Rob's kind of question there, is there, you see a huge gap, I guess, is there a gap between just 6 and 7 and that's where the big gap is?
Exactly.
You know, like Northwestern,
yeah,
so bad, exactly. Or is there a drop off somewhere that you see, like it's clearly the top 2 and then 3 through 5 and then 6 and 7, or how do you kind of gauge that?
Yeah, I guess if I had to, I'd say the biggest is between 6 and 7. I think the Northwestern's so far removed from competing. I mean, Purdue just won the thing. They just won the Big Ten West, and despite a coaching transition, they should be competitive again. But with Northwestern, yeah, I think I have them dead last in the Power 5, if not second to worst behind Stanford. They're mm-hmm. they're awful this year at most position groups and going through a tough tragedy there all season. So that's the divide. Is I had 6 contenders, really 6 that could, you know, push for bowl season or 8 wins or whatever, but with Northwestern, they're nowhere close.
Yeah, you know, that is so crazy, though, to your point. The number 6 team here is the defending champ of this division. And like Rob said, hey, Nebraska's beat number 2, but we also lost to number 7 last year. Like, nothing makes sense. There's nothing easy about this. I don't know that there's one great team, but I definitely know there's one really, really not great team. I'll just say that's nice.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree with this. I might switch Wisconsin, Iowa around maybe, but it doesn't really come down to it. But one of the factors here is quarterback play. Who do you think is the best quarterback in the Big Ten West?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, that's a great one. I'll probably go with Tanner Mordecai from Wisconsin. I mean, let's see who we're competing with. You have Cade McNamara from Iowa.
Yeah.
Another transfer coming in at Illinois, Luke Altmaier. Minnesota, Kalik Manis, the new former backup of Tanner Morgan.
The Greek gunslinger.
Exactly. Jeff Sims, I consider up there too. I want to see him in this offense. We'll get to Nebraska next, but he is incredible to watch. Really a highlight reel waiting to happen. And don't forget about Hudson Card at Purdue.
Yeah.
Top 50 recruit. Obviously lost a battle against Ewers, but that's a tough quarterback room to deal with at Texas. So. To answer your question, I'd probably go with Mordecai right now.
Yeah, I think that's why you probably have Wisconsin above Iowa, right? I mean, I think if you felt like Cade McNamara would be enough of a game changer for Iowa offensively, since they still have the same offensive coordinator.
he's got incentive to score points this year, Dave. So
someone does
in that whole team.
If they can get to 25, right? Hockey has a race to the 6. Iowa has the race to 25.
The race to 25 for Iowa there, yeah.
But Mordecai, SMU guy, is that right? Was he somewhere before SMU even? Is this his third spot? I don't know much about the guy. I just know he threw the ball a lot.
Yeah, I think he started out at Oklahoma. He was a 5-star or high 4-star guy. Went to Oklahoma, lost the battle there against one of those highs and winners, and transferred to SMU. I think he's put up consecutive Davey O'Brien finalist seasons or something. He got a lot of hype down there, a lot of yards, a lot of stats. But really take a look at what Wisconsin added to their receiver room. I think that's a game changer for that offense. It's several four-star and five-star guys, and even the existing guys are all back. So it's not only just a play on Mordecai. It's really the surrounding cast. Their backs are incredible, that duo at Wisconsin. Cool. So when you're comparing Iowa and Wisconsin's offenses, I look at the total package, not just QB to QB, because Wisconsin has a lot more firepower than Iowa has.
I am buying what you're selling, Brett, with Wisconsin. I am. My only hesitation is, man, that's such a change. Like, we're talking about the receiving core, what they brought in. And that, when I think of Wisconsin, I'm thinking of, you know, your gigantic linemen and double tight end sets. I'm not thinking of three and four wides. But to your point, I mean, this could be what takes Wisconsin over the hump, what they've missed. I just wonder if they go in the other direction. But I am buying what you're selling here. I really am.
But I would just add
also
to that,
think about what held them back to a quarterback the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We did have a question from a listener here. We've apparently breached the Boilermakers media market. Longtime listener and a P6P purchaser asking about Purdue. If they're upset week one, is they likely looking at an 0-10 start?
0-10? No way. I think Purdue's a solid team. It's just it's a crowded division. And I think that Ryan Walters is a great defensive mind. I think it's going to be a transition to his head coaching role. And we'll see, though. I think it's a long-term, it's a good hire for them. They're kind of rare, too, because they're always offense first to go with a defensive mind. But, I mean, look what he did at Illinois. He turned them from one of the worst secondaries into the number one secondary in the country last year. Several guys early in the NFL draft from Illinois, you just don't see that very often. So. They got a great young up-and-coming coach.
Mm-hmm. I
appreciate the question because the thought process is good, because after Fresno State, they play Vodtech and Syracuse, and then they don't get Northwestern until week 11. So, yeah, they've got a tough stretch there where they might not be favored in too many of those games.
So they play 11 P5s, well, one of them being Northwestern, but – Well, you know, this is, I think, a good point here. Redcasters, thank you, by the way, for the Purdue question. Redcasters, Mac, wake up, Mac.
I'm here.
Let's get to Nebraska. This is the final part of this. And, you know, Dave, you already mentioned earlier kind of what my offseason mantra has been. And Brett, to bring you up on it, I've said it for us, to me, it's the race to six. And the race to six is just that. How quick can we get to six wins? If we're 6-0 after six games, awesome, right? Let's reevaluate. Let's get to 8, 9, 10, 11 wins. Like Redcaster said, let's go 10-2, right? But if we're 5-6, when Iowa comes to town on Black Friday, let's get that sixth win. Let's beat them for a second straight season. Let's get to a bowl game. That's so important at a place, a blue blood like Nebraska, to get back to the bowl games. And it's something that's been, you know, far too long for us. So I'll never put ceilings on this program. I'll never say we can only go 8-4. We, you know, I wonder what TCU ceiling, a lot of people last year would have said, you know, in year one of the Dykes era, a lot of people would have given the ceiling to them too, right? So anyone can beat it. But coming into this season, for me, it is getting to six at least. Getting that bowl game is so crucial, so important. So, Gretzianzi, not to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Are we going to a bowl game this year?
I'm going to have to say yes for the bowl season. I think that's definitely going to happen.
Go Big Red!
So many games here on the schedule. well, I mean, I was wrong the one year I picked you to win the West, so don't take my word for it too much. But no, I think there's a lot of areas of strength on the roster. There's a lot of winnable games here, and it's just numbers of some of those close games have to start reversing the wins. You already saw it last year. You got the Iowa streak ended. Really had Wisconsin so close again. Really almost ended that streak. But yeah, you look at some of these games, they might be on the road, but they're still winnable. They're still toss-ups. The swing games being Minnesota, Michigan State, even in Illinois. Those are all winnable ball games. And I think there's enough on that plate to get the six for sure.
You know, right here, we have a graphic that graphic designer Swobes created for us. It's ranked the toughest 23 road games for us. So to your point there, we start with Minnesota in week one in a very strange scheduling occurrence for us, only the third time in the modern era of Nebraska football. We start the season with two road games in a row. So the Redcast will be at Minnesota on August 31st. And then I'm heading out to Colorado to see Dave and Rob out there in Boulder the next weekend. Then we have Illinois on a Friday night after the Michigan game. So a 6-day rest after playing Michigan. We go out and play Illinois. And then Michigan State, which is apparently going to be an easy win for us, according to Redcasters, because I think they had us at like 75% winning in East Lansing. I love you, Redcast Nation, but that seems nice. And then we go out to Wisconsin. If you were ranking these five games here, Brett, from 1 to 5, hardest to most likely to win, how would you do this?
Well, I think the hardest right away is – yeah, well, it's a good question. I think the hardest right away is Wisconsin. So we'll put that as the hardest. I have them winning the division like we talked about. Tough place to play. Second toughest, I'll probably go with at Illinois. You know, I checked that. Let me flip that to at Minnesota. Just because you're catching, it's the season opener, the first game ever of this new era. You know, you have new coordinators, new quarterbacks, a whole new roster. So I think Nebraska in the opener, that's a tough draw to go into Minnesota. They're just such a well-established program, what they have there. It's very a lot of continuity. So I'll say Minnesota number two, just because it's the opener of an era. Third hardest right in the middle, I'll go with at Illinois. Just a solid team. You know, they're physical. You know what you're getting from them. It's a solid top 30 team. That leaves the second easiest or fourth hardest, however you want to phrase it. I'd go with Colorado there. Who am I forgetting here?
Oh, Michigan State.
I will go Michigan State with the number four spot, with Colorado being the easiest. I think you're catching. I think Colorado is very overhyped. I was on SiriusXM radio back in March, and they were asking me, can Colorado get to 10 wins? And I almost chuckled. I was thinking, you know, their Vegas number is probably going to be less than half of that. I think my answer was, if they get to half of that 10 wins, that's a huge miracle success. It's just, we never see anything like it in college football. 65 new players, just a Frankenstein roster put together. So I just don't think it's going to click. And if it does click, it's not going to happen by week two. So I think you catch them at a great time. And you guys know the stadium's going to be all red anyway. So I don't know if that Colorado game qualifies for this question, actually.
This is why we love the toughest road game.
Does that count? I don't think it counts.
Well, I have the race to 6 for Nebraska, but I have like the race to 3 for Colorado. So, that's very appropriate. So let's get to Nebraska here. Let's talk about, you know, what we have coming back. If we start on the offensive side, you've already talked about the quarterbacks in the league. And, you know, we brought up Jeff Sims. So he's one of the transfers, one of the many transfers in the Big Ten West. Obviously, it's not Jekyll and Hyde even. And Mac, I'll kind of talk with you about this. It's not just Jekyll and Hyde. It's high risk and high reward with him. Tons of production, tons of scores and touchdowns, but a lot of turnovers that have come along with it. And Dave, you brought this up over the offseason too, injuries as well. Yeah. So I'm going to ask you, Mac, and then Brett, we want to get you into this. You know, Mac, when you look at Jeff Sims right now, what are your impressions? What you've seen, we're a week into a fall camp. What are you wanting to see out of that quarterback position?
Mostly just consistency. Mostly just playing smart. You know, like being a manager and being explosive when necessary. I just I haven't heard a ton of hype around him. You know, like when Adrian's second year, there was nothing but hype about him. I mean, he had a good freshman year, but his second year, everybody was looking at him. Really, Sims doesn't make a lot of lists, even for the top transfer quarterback list, and I'm fine with that. I think. And for good reasons, his numbers are what they are. His turnover margin isn't great. And, you know, we've had a bit of an issue with that around here. So that does make me a little gun shy about just jumping all on board, because, you know, they always say the best predictor of production is past production, right? So, I mean, the numbers are what they are. But if you were going to say, get on the new NCAA football that's set to come out next year and create a quarterback, he would end up looking a lot like Jeff Sims, you know, kind of seeds, same arm strength, you know, accuracy is something you can work on, but you still have to see it. So, you know, obviously the offensive line starts it off, but to look at what kind of year we have, if Sims is anywhere sniffing, even second team all conference, third team all conference, we're having a good year.
That's
easily bowling.
Well, Brett, I mean, I think that opens it up to you. What are you expecting out of Sims in year one here? What would you say is a, I don't want to say ceilings, I hate saying ceilings, but I mean, what's a, talent wise, what is he at? What can Matt Rhule do with him maybe to fix some of the errors that he's done at Georgia Tech with the turnovers and everything? What can we expect out of Sims? What's a best case scenario kind of thing out of him?
Yeah, with Jeff Sims, I mean, we've seen the ceiling at times. So he's flashed it all the way back since 2020 when he was a freshman. I remember watching him at Georgia Tech. He was running all over the field. He's got 4.4 speed. So really impressive. I know Matt Rhule has watched him for years too and has been gushing over him at the podium, and rightfully so. The upside is definitely there. So when we talk about some of the limitations, the turnovers, the mistakes, I want to see more of it, though, because I don't know how much of that was the coaching at Georgia Tech or the scheme there or the personnel they had around him. There's so many variables there. It was a really tough spot the last couple of years at Georgia Tech. So, but the stuff that you can't fake or that you can't blame others for, the athleticism is certainly there. So he's a dynamic player. I can't wait to see him. I know Nebraska loves fast quarterbacks, you know, running quarterbacks, but looks like this guy has an arm, too. So it's exciting to see.
Fast quarterbacks and faster women. That's what we like. But anyway, what I was going to say was, is that added a whole new element to how you have to rate these? Because you look at pass production, you look at numbers, but a lot of times these guys are coming from different schools, different conferences, different offenses. Like, how hard does that make your job now to kind of unpack what they did, project what they're going to do? And, you know, I mean, it just seems so difficult.
Yeah, it's gotten 10 times harder than when I started this 10 years ago. I mean, back then it was very consistent year to year. The rosters didn't change much. If somebody transferred, he was probably a backup anyway. You never heard of the guy. So now you have starters, all conference guys transferring, even record-setting quarterbacks like Sam Hartman. And that's actually a great example to bring up because, yeah, I do this on a player-by-player or position-by-position basis, where with Sam Hartman, he was very proven at Wake Forest. But that's a very specialized offense. It's a very unique offense that slow mesh they run. That they're not going to be running that at Notre Dame. So I didn't, you know, you'd think that with that kind of transfer that I have Notre Dame up in the top 10. It's not always a one-to-one case like that. And the inverse of that could be true with Sims, where the athleticism is certainly there, but maybe the system didn't fit what he was doing, or maybe he needs better coaching around him. So it's definitely an exhaustive full-year project that I do here.
One of the things I love so much about the project that you do every year with Pick Six Previews, one of the reasons I think it's so unique as a publication is that it's not simply wins and losses and just looking at stats from the year before. You talk about win conversion. You talk about player development. You actually rank it, something I haven't seen any other magazines do. Nebraska over the last 5-year period has been number 19, relatively high out of the 69 P5.
It's a respectable number.
Respectable number 19. It's in recruiting. So number 19 out of 69 in recruiting. But out of 69 teams, and I think we all understand this because we started this podcast back in 2017, we are number 69 out of 69 in win conversion. And we're number 66 of 69 in player development. To put that in perspective, you know, to put it in perspective, Iowa from the West is number 2 in win conversion. Minnesota is 6th. In player development, Iowa is 3rd, Minnesota is 4th, Purdue is 5th, Wisconsin is 6th. So they don't recruit at the level that we do, but they turn around players and develop them. This is something we're going to hear a lot about here, or we've been hearing a lot about with Coach Rhule, is development. Man, development's important. We, in this fall camp of just a week and a half already, they have two different stations of players going, and everyone's getting reps. Young guys are getting 40 and 50 reps, and they've made a very big point of that. You know, Brett, walk us through a little bit of that. What is the win conversion? What is player development? Why has Nebraska been so poor at that? And what can Matt Rhule do to really make a big difference in that?
Yeah. So those two metrics you mentioned, I put together because, you know, it's you can't put all your eggs in one basket. You can't only look at the raw recruiting rankings. I think some of the other publications will just gloss over that and say, oh, they're the top recruiters, pick them to win. There's so much more goes into it. I mean, they're there. It doesn't just end on National Signing Day. They're there 4 or 5 years on campus. Something's got to be happening there when they're on campus. So, and that's weight room, that's strength and conditioning, development at the players by position coaches, coordinators, head coaches. Do the schemes work? Are they recruiting towards the scheme? So all that goes into it. And what those numbers are, it's comparing the raw recruiting rankings versus the actual win percentage, the game grader on the field. And then the other one was player development, which is the same deal. You start with the recruiting rankings, and then you compare it to what they're actually sending to the pros on draft day. So Yeah, Nebraska, to no one's surprise here, it's been a rough 5-year stretch for the program. They're towards the bottom there. They recruit really well, best in the division, but nothing has really been there to show for it. And part of it, and that doesn't, there's not really a metric to show it, but it's player retention. You know, you look at these top recruits that they sign each year, and then fast forward 2 or 3 years, they're no longer in Lincoln. So many of them have left. So that's one thing that I think Matt Rhule needs to focus on is player retention along with player development. So, and I think it's important to understand the strengths and, you know, potential limitations of your program. And I think that with Nebraska, nation best fans, you know, the NIL is going to be there. The fan support will always be there. It's never going away. It's one of the strongest out there. But on the other side of the coin, they don't have the geography on their side. They're not walking around South Florida where there's 100 5-stars or in Southern California or Texas. So given the geography, you got to be the best developers in the conference. And that's something that they can definitely get to. And I think that for Nebraska to hit their strengths as a program, they need to reclaim that spot as the top developers.
In the Deed the Glory Memorial Stadium, produced by Nebraska Public Media. From the original 1923 stands to today's 90,000 fan venue, In the Deed the Glory Memorial Stadium reveals the storied history, evolution, and significance of the stadium that is synonymous with Saturdays in Nebraska. Nebraska Public Media's newest local sports documentary follows the evolution of the stadium. It features interviews with Tom Osborne, Eric Crouch, Trev Albert, sports reporter and Husker historian Mike Babcock, university archivists, librarians, and Husker fans. It reveals little-known and lost-to-history facts, such as an underground indoor track and a partial south stadium collapse in the 1990s. It honors the 100th anniversary of the stadium built to honor the men and women who served in World War I. Memorial Stadium cost $450,000 to build, all financed by pledges made by university students, staff, alumni, and boosters. Watch Sunday, August 13th at 7 p.m. Central on Nebraska Public Media and Facebook Live. Visit nebraskapublicmedia.org/memorialstadium.
Well, Brett, you mentioned NIL there, and I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. And I want to, if we can get about 10, 15 more minutes of you, if we can. I know you have done shows today with Vegas. You've done shows with Spurs Up from South Carolina with Virginia Tech. I mean, we're the fourth show of your night, so I appreciate your time so much.
He's a hot ticket.
But you mentioned NIL, and I'd be remiss. And, Dave, I'm actually going to let you lead this part of the discussion. This is the last part, 10, 15 minutes, if we can get this from you, Brett. NIL, transfer portal, the realignment of college football. I just want to get some thoughts. And I know Dave and Boomer, you guys have been talking about this a lot. You know, I'm going to kind of open this up to you, Brett. What are your thoughts right now? The state of college football right now, starting with NIL and portal and college realignment, I mean, all the changes that are going on. Maybe let's focus on realignment since that's been in the news. What are your thoughts right now with the changes in the Pac-12 and everything that's been going on over there?
Yeah, well, crazy couple weeks we've had. That's you know, I saw some of the rumors, the tweets throughout the summer, but I had been so focused on getting the preview book to get published, I didn't really follow the storylines. And then all the news broke last week. It was pretty shocking to see with Colorado leaving, then Arizona State and Utah. And then Oregon and Washington, the Big Ten. That was a total surprise to me. So it's a topic that I don't really follow too much until it happens. And, of course, now I'm going to evaluate the heck out of it. But I think overall, I'm more of a traditionalist. I love the old history of the game. I love the old regionality, you know, playing your in-state rival, your regional rivals. So it doesn't really excite me to see Oregon and Washington playing against some of these East Coast and Midwest teams. It just doesn't seem right. I know it's a good financial decision, and I'm sure the Big Ten suits are happy, and the member institutions will get more of a, you know, more cash back and all that. But to a fan, I'm kind of against the change we've seen. So. It's like I said, it's the end of an era this year. It's a little nostalgic putting together the book this year because it's the last time we'll see the Pac-12, last time we'll see some of these divisions, and last time you'll see blue bloods like Texas and OU in the Big 12 and the LA schools out in the Pac-12. So really a shame, but we still love college football, and it's just going to look a little bit different next year.
I was going to ask, what do you think the long-term effects of realignment is in a school like Nebraska, where we're now in this gigantic super conference coast to coast, and with all of our unique situation, how does it affect us?
Well, it's interesting there. I mean, number one, the financial benefit. I mean, Big Ten is far and away the number one, them and the SEC. So you're positioned well long-term in terms of if it still becomes an arms race for the facilities and the coaching salaries and support staff salaries. So you're going to be on the cutting edge of all of that. That'll be nice. You have coast-to-coast exposure, which is huge. You know, now a little bit more of a West Coast presence. I know the Calabrasca movement failed, but I mean, it's always good to have coast-to-coast exposure. So you're all over the place there. I don't know. I don't think it actually changes too much for Nebraska. So if it was still a BCS structure, I think it'd be really hard to get to a BCS national title game out of the new Big Ten, just because there's Ohio State, Michigan, and the Big Ten West teams, and now these the best from the Pac-12. But in an expanded bracket, I don't know. I don't think it changes too much to finish in the top 12. So, yeah, I don't think of Nebraska as being too impacted by this.
Brett, you're from Pennsylvania, and you followed programs like Penn State closely all your life, probably, I would imagine. You know, Penn State was an independent for a long time, and you mentioned, you know, in the, our Blue Bloods conversation, Penn State, you know, has a lot of undefeated seasons, but failed to win those national titles back in the 60s and 70s under Joe Pa, because maybe they weren't perceived as being as good as some of the other schools out there because of Eastern football not being as strong, right? And ultimately, Joe Pa decided to get Penn State in the into the Big Ten, in part maybe because the Eastern schools like Syracuse and West Virginia and BC never could agree to getting into an Eastern super conference of sorts, right? You know, you know, I mean, I just, it's interesting to me. I think all of us here probably consider ourselves traditionalists, you know, to some degree, but I think Nebraska fans and maybe Penn State fans kind of fall in the same category. You know, everything started changing for us in 1996. It's been 25 years of change plus, because our childhood was the Big Eight when it was us in Oklahoma, and everything changed in 96. And, you know, that's a long gone, obviously. Right. So I'd love to be able to get back to an era where we feel like we can have 10, 11 really great games, right. Opposed to having some La Techs and Northern Illinois thrown in there. So do you feel like maybe an outcome of this consolidation results in, better matchups across the board throughout the entire regular season?
Well, yeah, I think you'll have better. Better is all relative. I think you'll have more Power Five versus Power Five matchups. Better to me. Sure. I think that when you look over the course of college football history, it's about playing your regional rivals. You know, the rivals where your coworkers are alums of the other school, and there's a lot of personal rivalries or family rivalries on the line. And when you move away from your geographical footprint there, you have less of that. Like an example would be West Virginia. Now they're in the Big 12. They don't have any school near them. They'd much rather be playing Pitt and Virginia Tech and the East Coast teams every year. And you see their attendance and their support go down. I think there's more to it about playing your local teams. You know, my alma mater, Boston College, they're on an island up there. There's no one around there to play. It's like UConn and UMass, yeah. And then nothing. You got to go 5 hours to get to Syracuse. So, I think regionality is such a big part of it. That excites people. Look at the South. They have all their in-state rivals, and they're all a few hours away from each other stadium-wise, and the rivalries are so deep. So, I think a lot of it is about proximity, and well, I know that might not apply to Nebraska as much, being, you know, in the Midwest and being, what is the 500-mile radius, but I think a lot of it goes geography, and when you take that away, I think you lose a little bit of it. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think there will be some new matchups. I don't know that they'd be better, but it'll be new.
Yeah, you know, Brett, I think what you're expressing, I've heard from a lot of other fans. I completely get it. Do you think that college football, the support or interest, is going to wane because of the changes?
Well, I think that I think it's going to be more focused on the postseason, and not to go the full extreme, but think of March Madness, think of NCAA basketball, yep. Where it is mostly, you know, it's mostly focused on February, March, and really the March Madness bracket when all the teams are involved, and it's a fun couple of weekends. But most of the country isn't tuning in December and January to watch college hoops, to watch an average weeknight game. because they know that they have that big reward in March, and what happens here doesn't really matter, and they'll catch up in March when the conference tourneys start. So I just hope that college football doesn't go that route, where some of these regular season games lose some edge, and people, the casual fans, will think, oh, we'll just tune in December at conference title time, and we'll see who makes this mega bracket. So I think your core base is always going to be there, and you guys are clearly in that if you're doing a football podcast, and the core fans will always be there. But I think you might lose some of that. You might lose some of that casual base that might just turn it off for a few months and tune in when it quote unquote counts in December. So I don't know. It won't impact how I view the sport. I mean, I'm a diehard. You guys are all over it, and we're going to love every second of it.
Do you think it is possible, though, that, like you said, if we do get more Power 5 versus Power 5 matchups, and it's not the, you know, Michigan's playing whoever the hell they're playing, and, you know, Georgia's playing UT Martin, that you might draw some more casual fans if it's now Michigan playing Oregon, followed by USC, followed by UCLA, or, you know, Georgia playing actual conference foes on occasion? Is that a chance? Because you see, like, the NFL, they've got a big postseason, and interest doesn't seem to wane in their regular season. Is that a possibility for college football? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that could help. It definitely will help. It'll definitely help in-stadium attendance. It's hard to get excited and drive hours and hours and pay thousands of bucks to go watch an FCS team come into your home stadium. So I think fan attendance in person will go up. The only comparison also I throw with the NFL, when you're looking to look at viewership numbers, the fantasy market is so big in the NFL, where you might have fans where, say, your team's not even playing or they're on Monday night, you're still going to watch all Sunday to see your fantasy players and see the games you're betting on. So I don't know if it's a direct comparison, but I do think that in stadium will go up, and I think that TV will be about the same. But I don't know; it's all uncertain. We'll see what happens.
So college fantasy—that's what we need. Is that what you're next step for the
NCAA? I bet we get a preview book for that, Boomer.
Jack's been playing
really good inside Brett
for years.
Yeah,
yeah. All right, good stuff. Nice.
Well, you know, let's, Dave, take us to parting shots here, because Brett, this has been a long day for him.
Yeah, really appreciate it, Brett. Let's start with Rob, and then we'll end with Brett.
Well, first, I'd just like to thank Brett for coming on. I appreciate every year. This is one of my favorite shows just to sit back and be able to listen to. And secondly, I just would like to say that I totally don't believe you on your West predictions, and Nebraska's going to win it. So.
Okay, Kool-Aid Rob. Boomer.
No, again, just like to give a good shout-out to Brett and Pick Six Previews. I do enjoy reading it. It's just chock full of good information, and saw Honky got a nice physical copy of it, too. That's fun to look at. And now we're just getting close to football season, so it's just around the corner, folks. So enjoy it.
Yep, absolutely. Mac.
Yeah, I guess echo what the other guy said. Thank you, Brett, so much for coming on. Always adds a nice national element to the show. And I just kind of appreciate your processes and what you go through. And again, I get so jealous when I think about how you've kind of carved out your little lifestyle, and then you've got this whole thing going, and I'm so happy for you. I hope it continues for you, bud. And you know, anytime you're around the Lincoln area or we can hook up, absolutely let us know. It's always a good time. We got a new facility to tour, you know, so
it's true.
Just going to dangle that carrot out there.
Shangri-La.
Thanks, guys. It cut out. It cut out. I couldn't hear much of that, but I'm back in now. Sorry about that.
Well, Rob just said that you know, he disagreed with you because he thought Nebraska should finish first in the West. So, you know, but that's Rob. That's don't take offense to that, right?
No, I love it. 10-2 by the poll, so we'll see.
10-2 by the
science.
Brett, as always, thank you so much. Your ability to come on here for an hour and 15 minutes and, you know, essentially, I mean, we're pretty easy, but still take on the five of us and every question that we throw at you after a full day of doing shows with different programs from Vegas to South Carolina to Virginia and everywhere in between. I never cease to be impressed by what you have accomplished and what you've created. And that's what Mac was saying in his parting shot. I know you kind of cut out for a second, but that was what Mac was saying too, what you've created. And then to create what you've done from scratch. From start. I mean, I remember going back and forth with you on Twitter back in 2017 when you were just getting started, and just you're a Heisman voter, for Cripe's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, you're on the one of the All-American picking teams. I mean, this is just amazing. It's just amazing what you've done. So Brett, number one, we love you. God love you. Every year we're going to have you on here to start off. My other parting shot, and then we're going to let Brett have the last one. But my other parting shot is the day-by-day Nebraska documentary. They had part one a year ago that was released. Part two hits the local theaters this week. The documentary follows the Huskers' 95 national championship season with several in-depth interviews. The movie will be screened at seven Marcus Theater locations in the Omaha-Lincoln area for 1 week, beginning August 11th, with sneak previews at select theaters on August 10th. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully we can all, you know, get a chance to either watch it. I don't know if there's streaming stuff. There'll be more stuff to learn on that. But anyways, I just wanted to put that out there. But again, Brett, you rock. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thanks, Hunk. All right, Brett, get us out of here. You have the last parting shot.
Yeah, well, thank you all for all the praise. I know I cut out for part of that, but I really appreciate all of it. And thanks for having me on every year. You guys are one of the first to have me on, one of my first shows I've ever been on. So I appreciate it from back then all the way in. It was great to meet you in person last year. I really had a great time in Lincoln. It was everything I imagined it'd be, really the hub of college football. Nowhere else in the country cares more than Nebraska. I can say that certainly. And it was great to see it in person. I want to come back when you got it back and running, though. I think I probably picked the worst week ever to come see it. It was right after the coach firing, and it was kind of a blowout game. But yeah. I'll come back in a few years when Matt Rhule has it fixed, and I can't wait to see it. But, yeah, great to meet you guys. A lot of respect for what you've built. Again, I tune in throughout the season, especially some of these bigger matchups. You're throwing together radio montages and highlight reels and all that kind of stuff. So keep up the great work, the great coverage. It's much appreciated here on the East Coast. So thanks for having me, and good luck this season.
Hey, Brett, okay, I'm going to put you on the spot one time before we go. 1 through 10, Matt Rhule gets this thing turned around at Nebraska. Yes, no, 1 through 10.
I'll give it a 10 being yes.
10 being like national championship. and two being conference championship.
Oh wow, that's the scale, man. I mean, yeah. No, I think something like an 8 or a 9. I think you could. It has a high ceiling. Hey, you've seen the ceiling at Nebraska. It's not going to be a 1990s dynasty, but it can be a competitive program again. It will be. It's just there's too much support. There's too much passion. Even if it's not Rhule, it's going to get fixed eventually. You're going to click eventually. And nowadays you see how quickly things can change. I mean, look at the forecast of some of these 1 year coach changes, TCU, a great example you brought up. Yeah. Florida State, a couple cycles of transfers. So it's possible. And I think they'll be back eventually.
Fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Well, great show. It's really thanks to Brett Stiansi of Pick Six Previews for joining us and really kicking off our season officially. So for now, let's call that a Go Big Redcast.
Go Big Red.
GBR.
A Herd at Sports Network production.